Podcast friends. This interview right here, I know it captured your eyeballs. I know you're like, what? An interview with a corporate spy. I'm just going to leave it there. And we're just going to build the rest. Now, in the episode details, you can see my man Kareem, his bio, where you can contact him. But this man was such a cool interview, such a fun interview. Such a real guy, man. So much authenticity in this man. And I love his way, man, his heartbeat and what he's up to in the world and where he's come out of, man. And so I think we'll all be able to learn from this story, this secret intelligence story, this being on the inside story. I hope you like this interview and you find some benefit and you too connect with Kareem and check out his podcast. So without any more introductions, here you go. An interview with a corporate spy. And welcome to the Justin Aguirre podcast.
Hey, Justin, how's it going, brother?
It's going well, brother. It is really cool to have you here because, dude, I have never interviewed a former corporate spy.
Yeah, not many people have.
Yeah, dude, it gets me like excited because in a way, like, I know nothing about it, and at the same time, it's like there's so much to learn, which makes me like my ears perk up, you know.
Sure. Yeah, it's definitely obscure. It's not one you hear every day, but hey, we're people too, man. You know, it's pretty amazing how I landed in this, and that story in its own right has its own, you know, kind of interesting twists and turns. But yeah, it's absolutely 100% the reason I've been able to be successful today and been able to spider out into other things that I've done since then, and been an amazing experience without question.
Yeah. You know, I want everyone to know that Kareem also has a podcast, and I'll drop that in the show notes for everybody, because I've been listening to that podcast. I'd have you know, and I know you dropped one today, and I got to hear that too. Good. And I'm like, I want to know this guy, man. I want to know his story, and just, I think where I want to begin with you, bro, is like, so just so everybody knows, like a serial entrepreneur, former corporate spy, like really involved with like counterintelligence and cybersecurity and U.S. intelligence. Like, I don't even know if I'm getting these words right. But it all started with being this bartender in New York.
Yep.
I see that. I see this guy not too long ago, like making a fine old fashioned, right? And then he's like making these like counterintelligence products and stuff like that. And dude, I mean, this is cool. So, did you ever think it would end up like this? Yeah, what would be the word that you would use right now to describe like your life?
Astonished is a good word. Yeah, absolutely, man. No, I had no idea it was going to turn out the way it did. And you know, your comment was very, very accurately stated, which is I was making a killer, you know, smoky old fashioned back in the good old days. And, you know, then not even 2.5-3 years later, I'm sitting in a boardroom in London with a really major oil company that was looking to win several $100 million bid. And I'm like, okay. And I remember I had that epiphany at that moment, Justin. I was like, I actually had a very similar thought to what you even just said, which is, mm-hmm. How did this happen? You know, and you know, what's funny about that is that and per my title for my own podcast, I'm an introverted character. I'm not this overly outgoing, you know, showboaty kind of person. I'm not. And honestly, that sounds counterintuitive to what people think you'd have to be to do those kinds of jobs. Right.
Yeah.
But it is those introspective people that think logically, you know, like I like playing chess. I like being quiet. Yeah. I like being in my own mind. And that helped me do my job really, really well. And actually, bartending required more guts in certain ways than my corporate, you know, intelligence work, because with bartending, you had to be social, you had to be friendly, you had to be out there. With the other stuff and what I got into, I could kind of lurk in the shadows, and I simply had one client. I had one point of contact in many cases. So mm-hmm. it was a lot easier, but yeah, no, so it's kind of a dual edged answer. So one, I'm astonished that things mm-hmm. worked out the way they did. On the flip side, it was what I had always wanted to do. Always wanted to make a big difference. I wanted to have an impact in some way. I just didn't know in what capacity or how, and this has absolutely been a ride, and I've implicated a huge number of outcomes that I never thought I would, which is pretty cool. And it's good to be able to share those stories with people now.
Yeah.
All these later.
Yeah. Yeah. Like even right now, man, like, do you feel like people within your profession, like, do they, cause you hear things like, when I was younger, I had this inkling, I leaned towards this way. And you kind of had these like gifts that maybe put you on a path for a career. Do you mm-hmm. feel like there for your profession that you were in and that you're still involved in, like, are there certain traits? Cause when you said introvert, I was like, yeah, that makes sense for mm-hmm. someone that would pursue a career like this. But do you think there are other traits that really make a person stand out and lean that way?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's interesting you asked that question. So I hired two folks right now that are part of my current organization that is a cybersecurity intelligence firm, right? Mm-hmm. And both of these individuals did not come from the intelligence world in the past. They did not have any training. But what I saw in them were in one thing was tenacity. It was the ability to grab hold of something and learn how to do it by themselves. They were able to be self-starters. They were able to figure out something from nothing. They didn't need the instruction manual, right?
Yeah.
And that was a really fascinating characteristic or trait that I looked for, that I wanted to find, because I could get the most well-trained operative in the world out of the US government, put them in a situation and put them next to someone that just has a natural inclination to be curious and figure it out. And that person that's curious and that wants to figure it out will do better. Remember Men in Black with Will Smith room when he's filling out the form?
Dude, that movie is like perfect for this talk, bro.
It's exactly right. And you know how he's like, he doesn't care. He pulls the table over to fill out the form. All these other guys are trying to do on their laps.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's people that are willing to go break those rules a little bit to get to the objective.
Yeah.
The second thing was an individual that was very skeptical and wanted to question things and was conspiratorial a little bit, right? Because you have to be in order to. So in my job getting the intelligence from my client, I had to think about ways that I could get information from people. And when I pivoted to being the protector and someone that would actually help protect them from guys like myself, I had to figure out ways to say, if I was sly and I wanted to get this is what I would do. So this is the countermeasure to that. So you have to think like those guys and have that mindset. You can't train someone in that sometimes. You have to kind of have it or you don't.
Yeah. 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 It's a sly, cunning, but the thing is like, it's almost like undercover, right? Cause you're
right.
The end result and the intention is for the good, but we mm-hmm. go through this road of like, oh no, like I'm taking the whole thing down. So it's like, you got to hold both in the same hand. And it's hard to find people like that.
Very much so. The US government has the hardest time ever because they have extremely rigid parameters that in order to get clearances, they need people to basically be Boy Scouts their whole lives.
Yeah.
And that's wonderful. And I admire that quality. Yeah. You're not going to learn much by always following every rule. And I'm not saying, I'm certainly not encouraging people to go out and be criminals, but my point is, in order to be good at something, you have to be curious. You have to take your toys apart as a kid, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like, I've heard this saying, like, it's hard to trust people without a dark side. So
well said.
Cause if you come through the dark and you make it through, then you're the real one. Cause you understand light and darkness. But those who are sheltered in the light, they're good, but they're missing the whole other half.
That's right. There's no balance and there's no appreciation for one over the other when it's just simply been one-sided. You're absolutely correct.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good. I want to take it here, man. So you're a bartender, and then just listening to your podcast, so people have a backdrop. So you get this job in like 99 and like office job, like super clerical, right? And then there's like a case, and you see like people in the office, like, so you realize like something bigger is happening here, and then that leads to you doing some more digging into what it was all about. And mm-hmm. if you could just take it from there, like how that sets up your actual career, and then let's write it from there. Yeah,
absolutely. You nailed it. So I'm there in this extremely junior position, with absolutely no access to any of the senior leadership to help any of the decision making or whatever. And the issue that day was that there was a very large deal that was in jeopardy. The client of the company I worked for was an American company, and they were very worried that they were going to lose to this Japanese company of equal size and stature and all that.
Okay.
And so I'm, young and inquisitive, and I'll tell you, that's the beauty. If your listeners are young and they're aspirational, take advantage of that. You can, I don't mean to say this in a negative way, you can afford to be kind of dumb and just be like, I don't know, just tell me. I'm just trying to learn. Yeah. And you get away with a little. Then when you get older, you're less likely to say that. You feel like you should know it. So take advantage of that period, play the dumb part. It's actually a good thing to do it. That's then
good advice, man. Yeah.
And I did, and it worked out because they were like, well, this is the situation, and we really can't help it in any way. And I'm like, well, that's a pretty fatalistic and kind of given, there's no creativity in that. I don't know if we can do anything. So the short version is that I ended up figuring out that the other organization that our client was worried about had a representative like us. So think of two vendors competing with each other on a world stage. They each have representatives in that country. It happened to be in Kuwait. And okay. I was working for one of them. And then there was a counter one working for the other organization. And I found someone in that organization that was able to get copies of the paperwork that we needed to be able to compete.
That's right.
In that era, I mean, there was no rules. It was sort of the Wild West. So frankly, in this day and age, I mean, that would be straight up espionage, right? In some ways.
Yeah.
And it was, but there, we're in an era where there was just no rules defined. It's kind of like the internet today. It's Wild West. You can kind of do a lot of things and there's really no ramifications. So I was able to train and learn in an era where there were limited rules and I wasn't restricted. And it was amazing because what got me was when I found the one paper that gave the answer to this incredibly important question, the rush I had was huge, man. It was like, wow. Oh my God, this couldn't be. I was like, I didn't believe it. I was looking at this thing going, no way. It couldn't be that simple. And it never was after that, by the way. Everything was a lot harder to do after that. But that one win that I got put me on this path that was so exhilarating, right? And I took that into the management team. They had the same problem. They couldn't believe it. And then they finally came around to believing it. And it dawned on me that, and it's, the word hacker, I know, has a negative connotation, but that's the hacker mentality. If you can find a way around something, like my kids, hack doing their homework all the time. They're always trying to do something else other than their homework.
Yep. Yep.
But that's the mentality is can I find a way around it? And there's always a way around something. Yeah. There's always a way under or loopholing it. And that's kind of what inspired me to go after it. And I assembled an incredibly interesting group of people as a team for that effort. And the way I assembled that team was based on the requirements of the project. So in that same podcast, I talk about, we went from something as simple as just sort of hiring someone within the organization to get us the data all the way to where we got highly technical, where we're using things like laser microphones against windows to collect the sound that's happening within the room, a quarter mile away, half a mile away.
Yeah.
We were getting into unsecured wireless networks from outside the buildings and collecting all the traffic that was flowing through from a car on the outside.
Yeah.
We dropped backpacks near people's office buildings that would collect everything from audio to video to wireless, information, and parse through it and then build a profile and then take it to our customers so they would be, or clients at the time, so they can make some decisions. And it it was a whirlwind, very rapid ascent from nothing to something really quickly. And then I founded the company around it.
Yep.
And yeah, the rest is history, man.
Yeah, dude, the rest is history, real talk. Would you say that moment where you had that in your hand and you're looking at it and like you had that aha moment, was that something that really just fueled the next few years of you launching things as a serial entrepreneur?
It did. And you bring up a good point. You have to hang on to the wins because that's what keeps you going. Just like in fitness or yep. in anything, if you have a great workout and you see the gains and you start to yeah. feel that it's happening, you know, or you work out, you go to sleep, you wake up the next morning, you actually feel stronger. You have to remember those good times because there's always those very dark periods where you don't feel the gains. You feel like nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
In fact, the story you probably heard today was all about how, while I thought I had found the ultimate job and I was never going to do anything else the rest of my life, when I was, you know, in the early 2000s, I was like, this is it, done. I figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's perfect ever. Right. Yeah. And I started to realize that I can't always rely on, you know, opportunistic situations like what got me into the business to happen. You have to make those opportunities happen for you.
Mm.
And so, after a while, as I got a little bit more, acquainted with the highs and lows of it. And those highs and lows were things like I would have more clients than I could possibly handle, and then I have none. And that cyclical wave was very hard to build a pattern or a routine of life around. So for example, it impacted my relationships, meaning I couldn't, you know, if I had no customers or clients, I could sort of stay where I lived. I could have a consistent relationship. But then when there were like a bunch of clients all over the world, I'd be traveling everywhere. And, you know, that takes a toll on your personal life.
Yeah.
So eventually I was like, I need stability. I needed to sort of build something that was more consistent and reliable, especially if I wanted to transition from being a young bachelor into something more stable. Right.
Absolutely.
And that evolution, and hence the titles for some of what I talk about a lot. And you do the same. Evolution is a very big part of life.
It is, man. I've realized that it's more about the person I'm becoming as opposed to like what I'm achieving. Right.
Well said.
What I'm achieving is it's very nice, and but it's very temporary.
Right.
And what I keep is who I've become and what I've built throughout the journey. And that's, I'd be interested to know like how you define, because I feel like when you're young, when you start out and you're an entrepreneur and you're making these like this money, like you come from this from another country and you have like not much, and then you go and you have a lot, and then you can buy all these toys, and then you weren't able to do that before, and you're like, whoa, all these opportunities, all these connections, all these people, you start growing, like your mindset shifts, like you're not the same person anymore.
How do you
define like what it means to be, successful.
Yep. That's an awesome line. And it's so interesting because I think you and I are both going to be getting into this and subsequent episodes and whatnot of our respective podcasts.
Yeah.
Man, you nailed on something really important. So I had the good fortune, and this is leaping ahead. In fact, I just touched on it in the episode I put up today. I built a company that I sold.
Mm-hmm.
And it sold very rapidly. It sold in 2 years from the time I built it.
Wow.
And again, something I didn't expect to happen. I didn't even know really what I was doing to have that happen, but it did. And the windfall from that was substantial. Now, it wasn't so much that I would never, ever, ever have to work again the rest of my life, but it was a lot to where I could build a really good nest egg. I could have assets. I could essentially have no debt. I mean, pretty much the dream that most people have, which is to have financial freedom to a degree, but then be able to do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And it was incredible. So I have to tell this story, and I'm going to do it. I'll be telling the story in some of my own episodes, but this is an important one, Justin. This is not a story I'm proud of at all, man. I sold that company, and my wife, I have pictures of this. Literally, I'm sitting there, I'm all grizzled. I'm like, not in good shape because I've been struggling with getting this thing finished, you know, for the last month, and I'm just a slob on the couch and I'm like, you know, I'm unshaven, I'm unkempt, you know, and I'm like, she has pictures of me hitting refresh on my keyboard because I'm looking at my bank account because I'm waiting to change
the wire. Yeah.
Literally. Yeah. The wire. Exactly. And there's a picture, literally one picture I'm kind of grimacing and like just dead. And then the next picture I'm like, right. And those that can't see me, I'm like, oh my God, the picture's got me pointing at the screen. And
I'm so glad she captured that. That's awesome.
Oh, it was incredible, man. You know, and it was surreal. There's no other word for it. Now, this is the cool part of the story, which is that, wow, you know, I won. This is amazing. I've got this huge windfall. You know, we're now in a whole other category of life. You know, I couldn't even understand what it meant at the time. And this is where it goes. This is where it gets dark. That day, my wife called all the team members that were within the same place we were in and said, look, we're going to have a dinner in celebration of this event. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't in any overly glamorous place or anything. Even if it was, it wouldn't have mattered. My point, here's where it gets weird. Mm-hmm. My thoughts were not about celebrating with that team or with my wife or my kids and all that. My thought, as much as I hate to admit this, was I was fretting about spending any of that money where those amounts of zeros would change.
Wow.
It's terrible, man. And I'm telling you, that was a capturing moment, meaning it was like, oh no, now I'm trapped in where I can't lose wealth. And I've heard about this before.
Wow.
And that is a terrible place to be, because when you're stuck just wanting more and needing to see those zeros get bigger or stay the same, you don't enjoy your life. You start going into the state of being even more miserly and even less, you know, and it took a lot of interesting events to happen to where I had to break the seal of spending the money. And once I did, and I got over that, I was better. And frankly, I started, as bizarre as this was, I had a period where it was extreme, like surreal levels of happiness that quickly dropped off into like worrying about things, because I felt like if I shifted from where I was, then I would never be able to get back there.
Yeah.
Finally kind of leveling out where I'm like, okay. You know, I'm good. I'm not great. I'm not bad. This is better. I'm happier. And
wow, dude.
I've told young guys about that are looking to win. And I'm like, just don't forget that is a dark place to be, man, because you're trapped by it.
Cause like, you're a slave to a number, really. Yeah. And then, and I think what ends up happening is you can either like go crazy and spend a lot to break the seal, or you just get more greedy.
It's exactly right. Exactly right. And it's kind of a long answer to your good question about what success. So at the time, success was that. And mm-hmm. I thought, done. Like, I was very destination mentally driven. Now I'm journey, like you are.
Yeah.
It's more about the journey.
And, just so everyone knows real quick, like, I think like, a lot of people's goals is to do what they love and make a bunch of money. Like, that's what I hear the most. Like, I want to do what I love and make money so I can be free. And I'm like, okay, what happens when you actually do it?
Yep. Yeah. What happens when the dog catches the car, man?
Yeah. Like, what next? You know? And that's where you went. And because a lot of times we put that in our heads because we feel like we might not get there, but if we do, at least we got there. And it's like, what if you do, bro? Then what? You know, go on.
No, you're exactly right. And human nature is so strange that way, because somehow we have it in our minds that there'll be this eternal bliss when we reach this destination. It's so not the case, man. Human nature is built to need more anticipation and excitement. Everyone wants Christmas evening, not Christmas morning.
Oh, that's good, bro.
You know what I mean?
That's good.
Because that's the sad truth is, even my kids this Christmas, it's notorious, man. You know, everything's unwrapped. It's all over. And they're not nearly as happy as they were before they opened the gifts, man.
Yeah.
Crazy.
That is such a good line, bro. Yeah.
So I got to open my gifts that day and I was like, oh no, now what? You know, now I got to go wait for next Christmas, even more gifts. You know, that whole crazy cycle that puts you in this. It's not a cycle. It's a spiral, man.
Yeah, it's a spiral.
You know,
it's and, the same with fitness, I see.
Yeah.
Like talking about numbers, right? Like I get to that weight on the scale, right? Mm-hmm. It might not be refreshing bank accounts on a screen, but it's definitely the same concept when you step on that scale. Then then, you know, then you're so scared that you might lose it, right? You might gain the weight back, or you're like, I made it, time to go to Papa John's. Like, you know,
exactly. Like, right.
Waistline and wallet do have synonymous effects.
Well said, man. Yep. 100% accurate. And yeah, I'm as much of a victim for that same thing with fitness too, where it's I've reached that goal. Now I'm excited, but then I could be that much better. You know, I'll see something on there and I'll be like, oh, man, I could probably do that a little, you know. It's like, look, I don't mean to demonize it, because improvement's not a bad thing, and the desire for improvements, but
of course,
savoring the wins. And you know, we hear a lot, and this is a little cliche, but we could talk about this for hours, you and I, but being in the present is hard. And, that's a big one.
Yeah.
Enjoy the wins, man, when you get them, no matter what they are.
Yeah. And so success, like, now, dude, reflecting back on it, like seeing it all, like taking it apart.
Yeah.
What would it mean to you to achieve victory now?
Now it's experiential. It's less things, more experience, more see, feel. And it's, you know, we're in this, sadly, this pandemic thing that really has sort of squelched exploratory nature a lot, right? We're being forced, understandably so, in many cases, you know, to stay inward and stay focused. So, you know, it's a little sad, but you can take that time and you can be very fruitful for mind expansion and soul expansion, everything that, you know, we talked about briefly last time we chatted. So for me now, you know, for example, the beautiful part about winning is that usually, you know, you've heard this before, money begets money and success begets success. You know, it tends to, unless you really screw it up, I mean, it happens, but you know, so now it's kind of like, all right, look, my goals are very different than they were before. Now, you know, I'm trying to figure out the best possible scenario to better, the lifestyle that I have with myself and my kids, my wife, others around me, friends, family, and maybe even people that I like, for example, the employees of my company, they're at that stage well before, you know, similar to the one where they're dying to have a windfall where the company exits and they have this huge, they're looking at the screen hitting refresh.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They're at that stage. And I'm like, yeah, I know that stage. You know? When you get here, and then there's others older than me, mentors that I'm seeing that I'm like, okay, now they got it right. They reduced down, they shrunk their existence to where it was manageable and enjoyable and not burdensome. So for me, it's very Asian in fundamentals versus Western. It's reductive.
Yeah, that's good.
Shredding down to sinew, to take like kind of a workout analogy, take it down to the sinew and the muscle rather than this bloated over.
Oh, that's good. I feel that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Like emptiness. Like,
yes. Yes. Clarity, like, lightness.
I heard this the other day, like the heart is most full when it's empty.
Yeah. You're not burdened. You know?
Yeah.
Relinquishing.
Would you say, brother, that like, would you say you have to go through that phase in order to get to this place? Can you bypass it? Thinking back of what we were initially speaking about, of like the cunning way and having to go through it to actually hold both, or can you skip it? Right. Like, is it the same effect with wealth, like, and success? Like, do you have to go through it, or can people like take your advice and the journey and stuff and like not go through that and actually be authentic?
So it's a great question. I think there are a few, there's cases where people tend to be, they'll take advice and they'll avoid it, but then they don't really know what they've avoided. It's kind of an interesting situation, right? You kind of need pain to appreciate pleasure. And so, unfortunately, as much as we mean well, and this is the case with our kids, man, you know, or people that we care about, we always tell them all these things like, don't do that. I did that. That was terrible. Yeah. Don't do it. And we think that's the best thing you can do for them. But what we're really doing in some ways is avoiding, or we're having them avoid a situation that might actually help them be very grateful later for why they did. So I think the answer to the question is yes, there are folks that can tend to be very receptive to advice, and they may take it and they may be better off for it in the shorter term, but I don't know that they actually become wiser for that. So I like to tell stories in a way that is less advising and more like, here's an anecdote. This happened to me. Let me know if your story is similar, rather than don't do this, do this. Because honestly, the circumstances are so different in so many cases. It probably doesn't better the person to simply tell them not to, to avoid fear and pain and risk.
Yeah.
It made me who I am today. And if I took all those facts, if someone was out there that I listened to, I have no idea where I would have ended up, Justin, or what I would be today.
Yeah, that's good. That's a really good response. Something in that you said earlier sticking in my mind when you said the word hacker has a negative connotation.
Right. Yeah.
And then I think about, like, if you have a hacker on your side, though, you feel really safe.
Right.
But yeah. Yet, hacker is such a mean word, you know, like, oh, like we want to stay away from them, as if we're in this like pure bubble.
Right.
But then we live in fear. So how do you associate with this word, like hacker now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like just being in the whole thing.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. So that word and really a hacker, right? It's interesting. The origins of that word were people that were curious, that were not financially driven for what they were doing. These were people that had a unique skill and talent and gift to be able to navigate things like computers and networks in a way that others couldn't. Mm-hmm. And many, many, many of them in the earliest days, the earliest groups that were out there, and they had the most incredible names. If you do any level of homework, you'll hear about them. Cult of the Dead Cow is one of the most famous ones.
I think I've heard of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, Loft and MOD and Phantom and all these groups that were out there back in the 90s and all that. And some of them are still around, but some of them have turned into really prolific cybersecurity professionals as well, by the way.
Nice.
So they've come out of the dark and they've gone into, you know, corporate venture capitalists love them and threw money at them and said, build me amazing things that you guys know how to do. Yeah. So the origins of them are not malicious or evil. It's just that the groups that were there for the benefit of themselves from a financial perspective saw those talents as a resource to exploit. And some of them bred that sense of greed and all that. And so, but what's funny about that, there was this whole period where hackers were scary. They were in movies. They were the people that were always doing some stuff that was anti-government or anti-corporate or stealing your information and leveraging it, which indeed is still the case.
Yeah.
But then even now you hear about, even, man, it was 2 days ago or so when they were talking about the intelligence agencies getting further latitude by the Biden administration to be more defensive for the country. And they said, you know, the patriotic hackers are going to be blah, blah, blah. So now it's now just a term for a talented individual in this regard. It's not any longer, from the sound of it, purely negative. It's interesting. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause when I think about it, because YouTube like talks a lot about like, these are the hacks, right?
Yeah.
It's always like a good thing, right? I'm like, but I think it's human nature when you think about like what it means to be a hacker. To me, like it's sort of synonymous with an unlocker.
Yes.
So you found the answer. And that's so right. you unlock the code, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And I think we all have that desire to do that in life. And in relationships, like, I want to figure it out, even if it's yourself.
Yes.
No, so you're interesting. Right. It's interesting how that affects our technology, because technology has its own mind as well. And it's a representation of our own mind because we created it.
That's right. That's exactly it. And it's interesting because they're going against the grain. They're going against what is the norm and the status quo. So when you do that, you become a rebel, an outlier, someone that is unorthodox, to my terminology, an iconoclast. You're going against something, you're a change maker, which is exciting to many, but really scary to the powers that be that have a very established system. So this is where the dichotomy exists between, they can't ignore it anymore because it's a very strong and very powerful contingent, meaning these groups that know how to do these kinds of things.
Yep.
So they can't ignore it, but they also will condemn it because it's going to ruin the stand. So look, a good example of something that's really, we all know very, very well, Uber, the mm-hmm. company, is the ultimate hack of a huge system like transportation. They broke all the rules in the world to get where they are. They still face a bunch of lawsuits and all things, you know, all those kinds of things, but they hacked the system. They hacked the very nature of how
good, man.
Right. And what's fascinating is without that, we wouldn't have a better way of life. Without those types of breaking of the rules, you never innovate. You never change.
Oh, that's so good. See, now the word hacker starts to become not only synonymous with like an unlocker, but it could become synonymous with being a creative.
That's right.
And with being an entrepreneur.
That's right. Exactly right. And
that's cool.
Many times what these guys will do or gals will do is they will find ways to force multiply something through technology. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, so for example, you know, again, back to the concept of I use Uber or Airbnb or any of these companies that have
e-commerce.
Yes, exactly. You do one thing once and you can sell it many times. And that is a very, very powerful reality that can't be ignored. And it's fascinating to me to see the old institutions embrace these younger, more radical, more disruptive ideas, because frankly, they're better.
Yeah. Yeah. And now it's the whole thing with like conservative, this is the way we've always done it. Mm-hmm. And then the threat of like, oh, here's the new way. Like, let's shun it for a while. Let's try to throw fines at it. But but here, alas, society's evolving. We have to accept it.
Yeah. And again, back to balance. And I'll speak for this in my own life. And you said it earlier, which I think is very well stated, is that it's easy to go way off the deep end with that and make everything dramatically radical and go against every institutional belief and idea. And that can be harmful too for your own well-being. I mean, this is where I think that whole idea, when people get a sense of power, it can be very intoxicating. And so keeping that in check, being sort of, to use that James Bond statement from one of the movies, be half monk, half hitman.
It's
a good one, right? Because that makes you very formidable, because you're controlled but very powerful.
I like Jordan Peterson, or if you're familiar with him. He talks about like a great man is capable of extreme violence but willingly forgoes it.
Well said. That's incredible.
Just like the humble beast. But he can fuck shit up.
Oh yeah, man. You push the limits and you'll get the wrath, right?
That's good. How would you say, and we'll start to wrap up here, how would you say you like keep when you said keep yourself in check? I was like, oh, that's good. That's a good line. How would you say you do that now versus how you used to do it, or what has it evolved to?
Reflection. You know, is a big one, because it's easy to, you know, make small things big. And now, especially again, back, not to keep harping on the topic of where we are today with the pandemic, but, you know, we got a lot of folks out there. It's amazing. Your people like you are around, man, to keep people inspired and healthy. Yeah.
Thank you.
Forgetting to be, you know, I'm not going to be as simple as saying be grateful or have a sense of gratitude. That's important. That's obvious. That goes without saying.
Yeah.
But more importantly, reflect on what is the case and where things can go, because there are more opportunities now, believe it or not, than there were even before the pandemic to be very successful. Wow. What we're doing right now is a testament to that fact, right?
That's a big line, man. Wow. That's an abundant line. I like that. Yeah.
Because people just weren't nearly as captive as they were to be able to be available to folks like us before. They were busy with their lives. They didn't have as much time to dedicate to learning and expanding. And I think that figuring out what, you know, back to the circular, back to the beginning of our conversation, what is success?
Yep.
Defining success for yourself is a really important thing. It's because it's so personal.
Yep.
And it will evolve indeed. Like, I feel very differently about what I want to win at than I did 10 years ago and then 20 years ago. They're completely different standards. And so take an inventory of yourself on a regular basis of what is good. You know, is it a betterment of your physicality, your mentality, your spirituality? Mm. Constantly inventorying and then saying, ah, these are the ink levels of my HP printer. I need this higher, this lower.
Oh,
I need
that's good.
Lower, right?
Yeah, that's good. Such a solid answer, bro. I want to say it's been a real treat, real joy to speak to you, brother.
Pleasure's mine, brother. Pleasure, man.
Yeah, dude, absolutely. But where can people connect with you? And dude, I want you to check out this friggin' podcast. First of all, it's a badass name, the Icon Class. Wait, am I saying it right? It's the Introverted Icon Class, right?
There you go. You got
it. Yeah. I'll write it down. Yeah. In the notes here. But is there anywhere else where people can connect with you?
That's the best one. I am on social media, probably live on LinkedIn, probably the most of the bunch. That tends to be the best for business, but absolutely. And I'm going to be spending a lot more time on that podcast and love to collaborate with you in further episodes, man. It'd be a blast.
Oh yeah, dude, this was great, bro. Well, thank you, man. We'll definitely do this again as soon as we can, man. Thank you again, brother.
My pleasure.